Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And if you have felt like you've been under a lot of stress and you really need to be able to deal with life with different perspectives, my guest today, Josh Baran, is a man that you are going to enjoy listening to. Josh is in New York. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure. I so enjoyed your book, The Tao of Now. What I liked about it was that it's not only a nice size to read, but it's something that has so much wisdom in it. You yourself are a former Zen monk and a teacher in Soto Zen, and you had been in a monastery. Then you decided to become a political activist. And now you are involved with marketing and public relations in New York. My gracious, what a circle of activity. How in the world, what monastery were you in? Where was it located? And
well,
how were you there?
When I was a young man, you know, and I was in my teens, I got very involved in meditation. This is back in the 60s. In fact, I started getting interested in meditation maybe when I was 12 or 13. And I was reading books on Eastern philosophy. There weren't that many out there then, but I did that. And then I heard about Zen, and to me, Zen was a meditation school of Buddhism that came out of Japan. And it sounded very sort of exotic and interesting and also very practical. And I lived in the Bay Area, in the San Francisco area, and I found some Zen teachers that had come over, and I began to study and ended up in a monastic life for many years. I took it very seriously, but also I found it kind of had limitations to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided after 7 or so years it was time to go back into, you know, the real world, quote unquote, and find my peace and my way, you know, being more normal, in other words. And so I did that, and that led me into political activism, social activism, and then I needed a job, needed to make a living, and I became sort of naturally evolved into a PR person, actually.
Well, it's so fascinating to me that you have followed this course of action. Now, you are the prime individual that the Dalai Lama works with when he comes to the United States.
Well, I would say I've done a lot of the communications for him when he's come to the Eastern United States. I don't want to overstate it, but, you know, he came, we did a lot of big events for him in Central Park with about 250,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Twice we did that, and I did the communications for that, and a lot of other programs that he's done where I've helped with the media and, you know, and set up interviews and that kind of thing. And I donated a lot of my time for that, and I know he's such a wonderful person to work with and to support. I'm happy to do that. And a lot of the PR work I do is for nonprofit organizations and good causes and
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that explains how you were able to get such a marvelous collection of concepts, ideas, different perspectives, which I think in our world today is so needed.
Mm-hmm.
To shift one's paradigms, I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we have in today's world. And perhaps I'm being naive when I say that, but we have so much coming at us, right, left, top, bottom, you know, in and out. It just seems as if it's always pummeling our space, unless we are able to detach from it. And so many people feel so fatigued just from what they hear with media.
Mm-hmm.
And you're involved in public relations.
Mm-hmm.
So here you've put together this marvelous book. Why did you choose to put in the time and the effort to make
this
book?
Well, you know, the book, I'll explain to your listeners what the book is. The book is really a collection of a daily collection of insights and thoughts and verses and teachings from all the world's religions and many philosophers and ancient and modern, and each one of them points to finding your peace of mind right here and right now. So it's different than many collections of spiritual wisdom, which many of them are, they're fine, they're wonderful, but this one is all about here, now, find your truth. And they're like daily reminders, and it's fun because you can open the book at any place and just read one or two things. When you wake up in the morning, when you go to bed, when you're going through difficult times, to bring you back to the present moment. And I started collecting these teachings on my own because I realized that was, to me, the essence of mysticism and spirituality and really psychology was finding your peace as your life is as it is right now. And I began to collect these pieces. I saw them in different places, and I began to sort of gather them, and it sort of evolved naturally into a book. And then friends of mine said, oh my goodness, you should put this together and make some commentary on it and share it, because it does have an interesting effect on people when you read different pieces from different worlds and cultures sort of pointing at the same thing. It has an effect on people when they read it, I think.
I really liked many of the comments that you make in the first part of the book. You said in the early 1980s, hundreds of spiritual groups started to unravel under the weight of their authoritarian cultures. Mm-hmm. And that's an observation we're seeing even today. Mm-hmm. People, again, the paradigms are changing. Mm-hmm. What worked in the 1500s isn't working today.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what we have carried forward in mentality is centuries old. It's not something that just popped up like a piece of toast in the toaster.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around for a while. But I really liked what you said when you said, I saw how much of my life's energies had been focused on looking forward to some imagined future rather than simply celebrating the all-pervasive present, trying to get there instead of being here.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I noticed that a lot in my life. I was always living in some kind of future. You know, I was always living down the road. And I think we say that to ourselves, don't we? We often say, I'm going to be happy when something happens, like when I get a better job, you know, when my daughter gets married, when I lose 20 pounds. You know, it's always when I die, maybe I'll go to some heaven. You know, it's always in the future, and we're missing the reality of the present completely, and we live in a kind of a dream state. Or we live in the past. We live in regret. You know, I wish that, mm-hmm. trying to change what happened. I wish this didn't have happened, you know, and you imagine in your mind a better scenario, you know. But the reality is, this is life as it is right now, and the more we can bring ourselves to that present moment, and that's where the waking up takes place.
There's a question to ask. How does it feel when you turn away from a stranger, a neighbor, a coworker, or your thoughts and feelings? When you do this, notice how you reject nirvana showing up right now.
Well, I certainly noticed that. I think that it's very useful for people to begin to see that when you doing that turning away. What does that feel like? You know, what's happening in your mind? You know, in your sensations when you turn away, and we do that so often. We don't even realize how often we do that.
It's so easy, I think, to disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
Now that can be a plus or it can be a minus. You can see something that moves you so deeply emotionally, and then you just say, oh, I shouldn't be feeling that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay to feel it.
Mm-hmm. Well, but whatever you're feeling, that's what's happening, you know. So
mm-hmm.
at first we just need to acknowledge whatever that is, you know. And then we need to explore our life and, you know, very much, the whole idea is really examining our life very much more carefully. And it's really amazing, because that's what the sort of the insight of the Buddha and many great sages was, that heaven was here and now.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a future thing. And so always there's an astonishment and an amazement. It's like, oh my God, I never saw this, didn't realize. It's all sort of my mind opening in the present. You know, and that's what a lot of, in the book there are a lot of little stories of people, which I loved actually finding these little gems. There's a woman who's making, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for her children in her kitchen. And all of a sudden, it's transformed into a heavenly state. She sees it as a wonderful, perfect, incredible moment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a woman who gets on the subway, and all of a sudden, she sees it as, you know, heaven on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And another person who goes through this when she sees her daughter has cancer, and she's dealing with something that's horrendous, at the same time she sees the eternal moment of her daughter playing in the sand in the at the beach. And so there's a wonderful moment of when, and there are many stories of children actually in the book who had this experience, and something happens and suddenly the perfection of the world is right here for them.
Mm-hmm.
And their life changes because of that. Suddenly the world is not seen as it was, but it's in a different way. And it's not something that is descending from heaven. It's not something other than your own mind right now, but it's when you quiet down, when you relax into this moment, when you start to look, then you see.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about, really about seeing. That's just what this book is about. And it doesn't, it's not about belief or about being a part of any particular religion or church or following anybody or anything. It's about opening your eyes.
And how empowering that is when you can do that at any given moment, when you can be so much present right where you are, right in the moment of experience, regardless of what the circumstances might be. But if you realize that you have the dominion over that moment in your cognizant presence of mind,
mm-hmm.
I think that's very powerful. But you had a page here where it was titled Forget Yourself. And it is, on the part of so many people, they say, well, I'm not thinking about me most of the time. Why should I forget myself? I do so much for so many other people. Why should I forget myself?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you examine yourself and you see what that is. And certainly the mind chatter can, if you notice it, it can be like this constant babble that goes on in your head. And when you relax, that sort of sense of the concrete self can be very, become almost transparent, in other words. And there's something else. Who are you, really? That's the bigger question. Who are you beyond, the thoughts you have in your head, the stories you tell about your past, or your imagined future? If you don't do all that, if you let all that just sort of get loose for a minute and not focus on it, who are you? What are you? What is this life you're living? You relax into your breathing, you sit quietly,
mm-hmm.
or you walk down the street, and you just pay attention to this, whatever's going on at the moment, your hands moving, your feet walking, your breathing. Just be present. And what is this life then?
Yes, with the ballet of life, really. And that leads into a statement you have in your book. Your thought patterns and beliefs are stories that you've been telling for a lifetime. Storyteller, who are you? Without the stories, who are you? That last question, without the stories, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
That's a profound question.
Right. It's almost like a meditation, or in the Zen we used to call it a koan. It's this question you can ask yourself.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you can just sit down and sit quietly in a chair, follow your breathing, and then say to yourself, who am I? Who am I? And some people just take the word who, and they use it like, not like a mantra that you would repeat to go into an altered state, but as a way just to question. It's a wonderful thing, actually, to question. Because there's so many things we think we are. You say, well, I am, I'm this old, and I was born in this city, but who are you at this moment? Without a past, without a story of the past, what's going on right now, and who are you? And it's a very powerful kind of almost a practice you can do.
Well, it definitely brings one into an entirely different area of thought. For those of you listening, I'm talking to Josh Brann, and his book is The Tao of Now, and it's daily wisdom from mystics, sages, poets, and saints, and so many, many people. Josh, and I really liked what you said, too, at the beginning of our chat, that this is a book you could open up at random.
Mm-hmm.
And I know many people love to do something like that. They like to be able to just pick something up and just open it up and see what the message of the day is. And it's a very powerful, insightful way to begin the day, and I think it's something that you could even do before you went to sleep at night,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to put yourself into a good mind frame. You have one section here on paintings in water, and I thought, thoughts, like paintings in water, they disappear as soon as you paint them. There's only mind looking at itself. I loved that verbal imagery.
I think it's an old Tibetan Buddhist imagery of painting in water, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many, and I think the book, I love this, the book, not because I put it together, just because I had such a good time in finding all these little, you know, quotes and teachings, and I found things from movies and television shows and plays and, you know, actors and, activists and, artists and all kinds of people, you know, and it was really fun to do that. And here's one I like. I thought I'd read. And this says, "Now start living." And it says, "I would like you to break the habit of waiting. You have waited enough. You have already waited more than what was needed. Now start living. And there's only one way to live, and that is to start right now. There is no tomorrow. The only time is now. All tomorrows are imaginary. The past is memory. The future is imagination. Only this moment is true, and only this moment is the door to the divine. Immediately you will see a new life happening to you." You know, I think that can be profound if you really
mm-hmm.
take it to heart.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't look for a heaven in the future. You don't look for someone to save you. You look to opening your eyes and noticing when you go into the future, noticing when you go into the past, noticing when you're rejecting life as it is, and just be present.
You have a cute story in here. It's called Toenail Polish. And it's one day Maureen Stewart Rashi was having tea with friends at her home in Cambridge when the phone rang. And a 7-year-old was on the other end of the telephone line and asked her, did Buddhas wear toenail polish? And Rashi asked her, "Are you wearing toenail polish?" "Yes," shouted the little girl, and she hung up. Now, that's sort of a bit of a whimsical stuff that's in there.
Well, that's saying, of course, that you're the Buddha. You know,
mm-hmm.
in Western parlance, it'd be saying, well, you're Jesus, you're the Christ,
mm-hmm.
which some people might think you shouldn't say that kind of thing. But the word Buddha means someone who's awake, who's woken up from the dream. And the idea, of course, is that we're all Buddhas, but we're asleep half the time, or more than half the time. And we need to wake up a bit, and the idea is that, you know, you're the Buddha. And that's what this Zen teacher was pointing out in that moment, you know, which is something to be pointed out, too.
You also have this one sentence, it says, "So it's all come to this." And I thought this was really well stated. The next time that maybe we're doing something absolutely ordinary, could be sweeping a sidewalk, could be washing windows, it could be petting the dog, it could be just doing anything. It's just absolutely ordinary. We just do it mechanically. That when we're doing something necessary, whatever it might be, just say to ourselves, "So it's all come to this." And I thought that one sentence just puts you into all kinds of mental paradigms.
That's right. Yeah, it is. I love that sentence. It's, you know, you can also say, "This is it."
Mm-hmm.
This is it, whatever it is. I'm sitting here washing a dish. You know, this is life right now. This is the universe experiencing itself right now. Here you are. There's no other life for you. This is it. You know, these are very exciting, because not as a philosophy, but as a practical moment-by-moment tool, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Just to bring yourself back to whatever it is. And it really does, it sort of opens up. Things can open up for you that way. And it is important to stress that it doesn't, the actual physical situation, you can have a very pleasant situation and comfortable, or you can be very uncomfortable. But the peace of mind you can find is not dependent on living in a palace or having all the right clothes or having life easy. You know, life is the way it is. You know, and it does come to an end, and this is the way it is. So how do we find our peace in the middle of all that?
It's
unpredictable, isn't it? You never know what's going to happen in a given moment. But it's still, whatever is happening, that's what's the reality of it.
You give a wonderful story in here about the very famous Balanchine.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And I really was impressed with this because I think that this is so realistic. And when someone has walked the life journey that this man walked, and I've known a number of people who have walked their own journeys with as much difficulty as he experienced. And it's interesting how some of them get it and some of them don't. But he said, now, what are you saving it for? This is what he used to say to his dancers. Do it now. This is what happened to Balanchine as a boy in St. Petersburg. He lived through the Russian Revolution and Civil War, and the privations of that period left a permanent mark on him. By the time he graduated from school, he was spitting blood. He managed to escape to Europe. In 1924, he was diagnosed with tuberculosis, spent 3 months in a sanitarium. For many, many years, he had fevers and sweats. It was just part of his life. And he had made a statement to someone, to one of his early dancers, you know, I'm really a dead man. I was supposed to die, and I didn't. So now everything I do is second chance. I don't look back. I don't look forward. Only now. And when I read that, it brought to mind the various stories I've heard about the man. Mm-hmm. And the ballerinas that had interacted within the environment and how intense he was. And that explains a lot about him.
Right.
Because all he had was, in his mind, he had survived. And that in and of itself, with all of the illness that he had had, he could go at any moment. So the pressure was on right then, right there. And he couldn't say, well, we'll do this tomorrow. He could, but that isn't where he was in his mind. That explains
yeah.
a lot about him.
Well, I think there are great teachers we find in many different disciplines who have that kind of fierce presence about them.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes them incredible teachers, incredible because they're very focused. See, that, I think that we're talking about this. It doesn't, this kind of attention to life doesn't make you foggy or too detached. It makes you actually completely engaged with what's going on. You know, some people talk about meditation, they get kind of maybe a little airy-fairy or a little unconscious, but to me that isn't meditation.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it may be relaxing and you may go into some altered state, but the more exciting kind of meditation is to be fiercely present. And then you're very effective, whether you're, you know, there's a great basketball coach from UCLA he's a big, big meditator. And the reason he was so good was because he totally focused on the present moment with his athletes. And we have other cases like that, too, of people who do the same. And I think it makes life much more vibrant. And it's sort of more demanding in some ways because you're not spacing out all the time.
Mm-hmm. I think that when you are in life and you're living life, and we all have those dark moments that can come in, we can have challenges that can come in, and when you can shift your paradigm, realize that you've got to deal with it, and you deal with it in the now, and don't make it any bigger than what it is or any less than what it is. Just deal with it in the now. That gives you a feeling of some kind of control to a degree because, as we've already discussed earlier, you can't control it all. You really can't, but you can control this response to it.
Actually, there's a story in the book about a Zen teacher who was diagnosed with prostate cancer and what he went through in his mind about it, you know, the fear and the concern you have, right? But then he realized that all his fears were things that had not yet happened, and his mind is what was giving him the most suffering. And by sort of understanding that, he was able to be much more present with his body and his life, and so on. And there are many cases of people through illness that actually find a kind of peace of mind when they wrestle with it and then they come to terms with it. Because that's what's happening at the moment. And I'm not saying, you know, go to a doctor, of course you do, and you try to, obviously we want to reduce pain as much as we can. But life brings us many situations. And maybe if we encounter it with open, fierce attention to the present moment, it can change how we deal with it.
I like your statement, all is a miracle. And I think that has been my observation on so many levels, even through some of the ugliness that's perceived in life. There is so much that's going on simultaneously to me, is just amazing. Whether it's watching a fly climb up a wall that I'd never be able to climb, the old saying, I wish I could be the fly on the wall in the room, mm-hmm. and then there's just the awareness of the seasons and changing, or just looking at what is about you and around you. It is really quite amazing. It is just absolutely amazing.
Well, I like to say also it's all a mystery. That's the way I feel about life frequently, is that I can't account for my being here. It's all extraordinary. And without a story about a past, who created it, who didn't, or a future, what is all this? And I realize we live in a kind of we don't know, and that's actually a wonderful place to be in.
Mm-hmm.
We just sort of accept, we sort of be here with it, you know. And we let life sort of breathe us, and, you know, we're barely aware of all the way. Like, you walk down the street, your body is doing hundreds, no, really probably thousands of things to make you walk. The muscles, your feet, your blood pumping, your enzymes, your whatever it's going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're not consciously in charge of hardly any of it, are you? You just walk, and it's all kind of extraordinary, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is an extraordinary situation. So I think part of it is just allowing it, just sort of defeeling that. But the main thing I would say to listeners, too, is, you know, is to spend time just quiet, sitting in a chair, looking out at your garden, relaxing, turning off the radio, you know, disconnecting from all the noise and the chatter that, you know, that we are subjected to, the computer, all the Blackberries and all that. And just sit quietly every day for 5 or 10 minutes and notice your breathing. And when your mind wanders, bring it back to your breathing and begin to notice your life in a different way. And take time to do that. And don't make it into some big, process that's a big chore. But this is meditation, and the meditation is awareness of the present moment. You can close your eyes or not, but the main thing is just feel your breathing, feel your life, just feel it quietly for a few minutes every day.
And you have the story about being at a train station. This just leads me into this. And you're observing amid all the hustle and bustle of activity, somebody had a garden across the tracks, and you noticed a cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
And you just looked at that cabbage. Now, someone would say, who the heck would care about a silly cabbage? But in that moment, you realized that that was an expression of nature. That cabbage had dominion in its own space. That cabbage was an expression of life.
Right. Well, maybe it's the Garden of Eden. That cabbage is in the Garden of Eden.
Could be.
It could be. You know, and also we got people in the book. We got, there are 4 or 5 stories of people who found peace while they were in prison.
Mm-hmm.
One was in a German prisoner of war camp. Another one was in a Spanish prison, for political activity. And they found this incredible peace and joy in the middle of that. So, you know, interesting.
It is.
Very interesting.
And I think that's why people like Nelson Mandela and so many others that have gone through various experiences, when they share their perceptions, when they change their paradigms, when they recognize they didn't lose anything from the circumstances that they were in, they chose to make it a life filling experience rather than one that would have no meaning at all.
Well, I think some people realize in those situations that if they just spend their time angry and upset all the time, it's very, very unpleasant.
Josh, do you have a website that people can go to? We're just about out of time here.
Well, you could. The book's called The Tao of Now, and that's spelled T-A-O, like the Tao,
mm-hmm.
the Chinese word. And I think it's taoofnowbook.com, but you can get the book online. And again, I love that I put this together so I could share all these great little stories and teachings with people. And again, it's a book you can open up anywhere and find maybe a little bit of pointing out or a little bit of peace in your life.
Absolutely. Josh Baran, B-A-R-A-N, or maybe it's Baran, however you would choose to pronounce it, The Tao of Now. It's a wonderful book, and what a great gift for the holidays for someone that is an avid lover of quiet and thoughtful reading. It's just rich with all kinds of wonderful stories. Josh, thank you so much for being my guest
today.
I'm very
glad to be with you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Bye.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to give me a buzz, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Here are the toll-free telephone numbers to call, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And also we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, all you need to do when you call in is give me your first name or initial. And, of course, I love to know where you're calling in from, in the country or in the world. Again, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. I'm an information resource, and I'm delighted to be able to share my intuitive skills and talents with you. By the way, I have got a recipe for a pumpkin pasta. Yeah, that's right, a pumpkin pasta. Really, really easy. What a fun dish to serve, and it's highly flavorful. So get that pad of paper and pen handy so you can have this recipe. Perfect for fall, absolutely marvelous if you're having guests, and who knows, you might even want to serve it on Thanksgiving. But before we go to that, I did want to mention something. Teresa Tapp is going to be on the air with me. She's been on an incredible busy schedule traveling. And for those of you who are regular listeners, you hear me talk with Teresa about once a month. And it's such a delight to have her on the air because she is so knowledgeable. But I'm telling you, in advance of her being on with me on the 26th, we were able to get her on the air. And when we're on the air, we're going to be talking about this some more, but she's going to be offering a special package to 3 lucky people. All you have to do is send me an email. We are going to be doing a drawing for 3 lucky listeners for a holiday gift that's going to be worth over $100. And it's going to be involving her CRT skin tightening system and also her TTAP workout. And believe me, that workout is worth doing. The results are amazing. And all you have to do is send me an email. Send it to, and when you send it to me, put in the subject line, The Donna Sebo Show, code DSS30. That's the abbreviation for The Donna Sebo Show. Code DSS30. I need your name, and I need your contact information, so that if you're one of the 3 lucky winners, you're going to be notified. And you can be fit and fabulous in 2009. You may be able to do it even before the 2009. But if you're like most of us after the holidays, we do want to get fit and fabulous. And by golly, you're going to be able to do it. So I wanted to give you the heads up on that because we are going to be promoting that drawing and you have a chance to be in on it. And if you didn't want it, you could also give it as a gift to to somebody that you know that's really been battling the bulge, and they've been wanting to figure out some way to get their body tone back, believe me, her system is awesome. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Also, I'm going to be appearing at the Dickens Festival in Tacoma, Washington, and I'm saying this to all of you who live in the western area of Washington. This is December the 13th, and this is a festival that's been going on for a few years now, and people come out in costume, and I'm going to be in costume. And this is being held at Stadium. It's just a great area. The Stadium community is fabulous near Stadium High School, which is a historical landmark in Tacoma. And it's going to be going on late morning until afternoon. In fact, I'm going to be available to do many consultations at a bookstore, and it's King's Books, and I'm going to be there from 11 until 4. We're trying to raise money for a particular benefit that is going to be going on for a community group. So if you want information, give me a call, or you can just go right to the Dickens Festival, Dickens Festival at Stadium. Go on the web, and you'll be able to find out more about it. But it's dickensfestival.net. That's the exact website. DickensFestival.net, and that will give you all the extra detail that you need. But I'm going to be there on December the 13th, and again, being able to raise some funds for a particular benefit that the group goes for. I wanted to share with you today something about Alzheimer's. This is becoming more and more important as we are getting so many more elderly in today's world. Life expectancy is now, for many, many people, over 100 years of age. The average age for a woman is in her 80s today, where it wasn't all that long ago, where if a woman lived past 30, she was doing something. Well, because of sanitation, because of food availability, because we don't have to work out in the fields, and just all kinds of things that have changed through the last 100 years or so, there has been this phenomena of people really being able to live a lot longer, and some of it has to do with health care. But the truth is that people are developing Alzheimer's. They do not know exactly what this is. And even today, with technology, they are having a challenge in trying to detect it. Sometimes they're right, and sometimes they're not right. It has to do with chemistry, with body chemistry, and the effect on the brain. Now, what they've developed recently is a radioactive dye, apparently, that highlights brain plaques. Yes, you've got different types of brain plaques, and they are hoping that it's going to enable physicians to detect signs of Alzheimer's even before dementia has started. And we got some information from a friend of ours whose husband apparently went through this process, and he has he's not even at the middle level yet, but the doctor told the wife, this is something you need to be aware of. Apparently it's developing in him. This is a man in his 70s, and his memory has been causing him some problems, and he's having some issues. So this is something that they're working with. Now, this is what they do. They inject an AV45 into patients having PET scans, and there the physicians can see if there are any particular amyloid protein deposits. Now, what they believe they do, they believe that they are the key building block of plaques that form between brain nerve cells in Alzheimer's patients. Now, they don't know this all for a fact, but they are studying differences in the brains of healthy seniors and those with mild cognitive problems or full-blown Alzheimer's. Now, they're really wanting to get to a point where they can make definitive diagnoses. And the sooner they can begin treatment to minimize the effects, they'd like to be able to do that. But they're still in the learning curve with this. So you can go in to a website. If you have a loved one that perhaps is having memory problems and you want to have some insight or information on this, go to AV-45, at clinicaltrials.gov. Clinicaltrials.gov. Now, it may be a few years before they're going to have more and more information available. All of this takes time. But it's very important to understand nutrition really makes a difference. And with Alzheimer's, many times people that have been diagnosed with it, unless an autopsy is done after they've passed away, you honestly don't know. We're still guessing. But as technology evolves, we may be able to reach that point where we can do something that can make a difference. We can see signatures of problems before they become major issues. And this is something I think we're going to be able to see in our lifetime. And also, they say early stage Alzheimer's patients have a new incentive to get moving. The University of Kansas did a study and found that patients who were fit had four times less brain shrinkage. Now, what that means, it means that cells in the brain are dying than those who were out of shape. So the benefits of exercising, including changes in growth factors and increased blood vessels and blood flow, may prevent brain cells from dying. And this is something that's important for the entire body. Jack LaLanne, I'm hoping to have him as a guest on my show. I've been in touch with the person who scheduled him. I'm looking forward to having him and his wife. And Jack is 95, and his wife, I think, is younger than he is. But here is a man who his whole life has been dedicated to wellness, and he was a big believer in supplements, too. So nutrition is absolutely important, and it is something we need to be aware of. So when you hear me talking about glyconutrients during the show, it makes a difference. Don't be afraid to check out the information. Take care of yourself. Remember, how you take care of yourself today makes a difference tomorrow. If you're good to yourself, you know, God forbid something happens, or maybe you have an accident or something like that, but your recuperation capacity is going to be 10,000 times better. So take care of yourself, be good to yourself, and realize that you are the most valuable asset that you have, and you want to make sure that you really take care of that asset so that it is going to be serving you well throughout your life. And I think that that's so very important. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Now, I said I had a recipe for you for pumpkin pasta, and I've got it right here. And this is so easy. Do you know it's only going to take you about 15 minutes to do the prepping on this? That's right. And within a half hour, you'd have a fabulous meal on your table, and boy, wouldn't it be colorful. This is pumpkin pasta. Now, this is what you need. You need 16 ounces of your favorite pasta, whatever it is, just your favorite, any kind. You need a teaspoon of olive oil, 7 ounces of light cream cheese, 7 ounces of light cream cheese. I didn't mention this is also going to be good for your waistline as well. And then you need a quarter of a cup of grated fresh Parmesan cheese. That's a quarter of a cup. You need a half of a cup of fat-free milk, half a cup of fat-free milk, one 15-ounce can of pumpkin, 15-ounce can of pumpkin, a half a teaspoon of cayenne pepper, half a teaspoon of cayenne, quarter of a teaspoon of salt, ground black pepper, and dried sage. You need a quarter teaspoon each. Salt, black pepper ground, dried sage, and then just maybe a pinch of nutmeg. This is how simple it is. You cook your pasta, whatever the instructions are, you just cook it and then drain it. And in a large saucepan, you put your olive oil, your cream cheese, your Parmesan, and your milk. And you keep it over low heat until the cream cheese is melted and you stir it frequently. Then you add all of the rest of the ingredients, cook until thoroughly heated, put your pasta in the pan, toss your pasta, and there you've got a beautiful dish. You might want to have a little bit of fresh parsley over the top of it, and then serve it with a delicious salad. Wow, colorful, tasty, very flavorful, and nice for the waistline. That's right, you won't be getting plump on that one. Just remember, fresh and fabulous is the way to go, especially during the fall. I think the kids would really enjoy it, too. They like spicy stuff. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. Don't go anywhere. I've got more good things to share with you. I'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little insight. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Individuals constantly amaze me. Whenever I'm listening to anything that ends up making me feel so depressed, I was listening to a political commentary when I was doing errands today and was out driving around, and by the time I finished listening to this stuff, I went, oh, my goodness. It just puts you in a frame of mind where you just don't, you almost feel so helpless. So I thought, well, what do we do about this? Well, of course, after doing so much interaction with so many positive people in life and knowing it's one individual at a time who makes a difference in the given moment, the very thing we were talking about earlier in the show, the Tao of Now, I wanted to share with you a story about a woman. And she is, her name is Cheryl, and she is just, Cheryl Likowski. She is just absolutely a dynamic woman, and I know if you were to meet her, she probably wouldn't even consider that she's doing anything really significant. She's just being herself. But I think her story really is worth mentioning. She is a woman who had worked a great deal with special need kids. And when you're in that kind of an environment, your world shows you a lot of things that many people who have never been around individuals with special needs don't even think about. It's just not in their observation spectrum. But she saw it every day of her life. She was so good at working with kids that one of the mothers said, Cheryl, you would be absolutely perfect for a particular program that helps kids in hospitals. And she just thought, not me. I wouldn't be good in anything like that. But the mother said, you need to check out this group called Hearts and Noses. Yes, that's right, Hearts and Noses. Now, this is a group that is a clown troupe. It's made up of volunteers who make bedside visits to cheer up kids that are sick in the hospital. Well, Cheryl's immediate response was, I'm not a performer. This is not who I am. Her dad, though, was a magician, had been a magician, that always did shows at children's hospitals for so much of his life. And she said all of that came back into her mind memory after she had made the comment, no, I'm not a performer, because she remembered and recalled the little things that he did that would just make the children totally forget about being sick. And she thought to herself, you know what? Every kid needs to feel that happiness, especially when they're sick. So the idea of possibly becoming a clown or becoming a part of Hearts and Noses, well, it grabbed her imagination. Now, she found one of the requirements was that she had to go to clown camp. And she met the founder, Jeannie Langham, and Jeannie had worked with one of those special people that finally was recognized in a movie, Patch Adams. Yes, man has had such an impact on so many millions of people with his attitude about sickness. And Jeannie said, we can't change a child's diagnosis or prognosis, but we can give them hope by making life fun again. Well, Cheryl got really enthused about the whole thing and decided she was going to make her own costume. And she decided to make a polka-dotted dress, and it was two big Mary Janes, and she wanted a shiny red nose. And I've got a picture of her in front of me. And she's so vibrantly colorful with this little bitty red nose. It's not a gigantic bulbous red nose. It's a little bitty red nose. And she has all of these wild and wacky ribbons in her hair. And TikTok is the name she adopted for herself. So she became TikTok the Clown. Now, on the very first time that she went into a hospital, she saw two children in wheelchairs, and when she started walking in, they were very down, and their faces were sort of sad, but with her wild and wacky costume and her singing, they absolutely started smiling and started joining in and singing right along with her. Well, she met a lot of children. Some of the children were undergoing chemotherapy. Some POW of them had been burned very badly. And there was a 7-year-old who had lost his vision. Well, Cheryl had a challenge with a 7-year-old who had lost his vision because she needed to think differently about how to reach him. And she wanted to play the harmonica, so she asked him if she could, and he said no. And she said, well, how about a song? And he wasn't interested in a song. She asked him what his favorite food was. He said, chocolate pudding. And she said, I love chocolate pudding. In fact, I love to take baths in it. This child started to laugh. Can you get the word? Just the image of taking a bath in chocolate pudding? Yeah. Anyway, this boy just started laughing. The mother happened to be there and was very grateful for all of it. But Cheryl found that it really made a difference being a clown. Teenagers would roll their eyes and say, oh, they're so weird. But TikTok learned how to reach kids, teenagers especially. One teenager, she put stickers on each nail, gave her a clown manicure. Imagination. And the love that the children expressed towards Cheryl is just phenomenal. Now, this started all 9 years ago. Today, she's the executive director of Hearts and Noses. And she said, along with 22 other volunteers who by day are everything from lawyers to students to building contractors, she's brought joy to 27,000 children in the Boston area hospitals and rehabilitation centers. She said, I have so many wonderful moments piled up, smiles, thank you, hugs. Knowing I can make even a minute of difference for these brave kids is a blessing. Laughter truly is the best medicine. One person makes a difference. Cheryl? I'm so glad you're there, and I'm so glad you've been able to affect so many. You just never know how you, your voice, your talents are going to be able to reach someone. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. I know we are out of time, but we're going to be back with you tomorrow, charting the course, talking about business ethics and many other good things with Bruce Howard. Won't you join us here at bdsradio.com? Just remember, same time, same place, right here, with me, Donna Sebo. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.